on this edition of the Car Jam podcast.
Yeah, I've driven with socks on and other clothes.
What a look.
I'm not saying where the socks were.
Land Rover Defenders, the chassis intentionally twists.
Said Land Rover. All ours twist like pasta.
The Land Rover Fusilli. Holding your breath in a tunnel.
Did when I was born.
Very good.
Well, so I've got an intro. I don't know if it's distasteful or not. So if this bit doesn't...
Yes.
If you're listening to this, Tony obviously thought it wasn't when he edited it. And if we just suddenly go, so welcome to Carcha, then you'll know it was. And we'll put it on the Christmas special or something.
The resignation special.
Yes. I regret if people were offended. I don't regret what I did. That's the way you do it as a politician, isn't it? An almost apology. But yes, so today's Carcha, my goodness, this is the 50th one. And as usual, we've done nothing to prepare for it in any way at all.
No, nothing special. Nothing. No. We wanted to go, leave it unmarked, Mike. You know that? You know, like when as you get older, you don't want to recognise the years. How's that?
Oh, no, that's fair play. Yeah, that's fair play. Okay. So this week's topic is old wives' tales. Now, statistically, having a tail in a human is very, very rare, but there's been less than 200 cases ever, and a number of those people obviously are going to become women, married, and old. So, old wives' tales, go for it, Tom, what you got?
Is that actually true?
Yes.
About tails?
I just looked it up, yes.
Right, okay.
Supposedly musician Nick Cave was born with a tail. I've no idea if it's true or not. He said it in an interview once, but it may have been a joke.
Really?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't make these things up, mate.
No, you don't. No, you don't.
Probably. Yeah.
Old wives' tales. Yeah, those things that you hear people trot out. How many times do you sit in a pub?
Often.
You don't illustrate the fact that you're, or highlight the fact that you're a car nut and knowledgeable on cars, but so no one knows, and off goes the conversation, and you sit and listen to it and think, this is nonsense.
Yeah, you've been watching a certain TV programme, haven't you, and you've believed everything they've said.
That's right. That's just not true.
Well, that's, as per usual, I suspect the first thing you did, as well as me, was go to the computer and type in top 10 myths about motoring.
I might have.
Yeah, so it will be interesting a bit later on when I say, so, Tony, do you think this is true? You'll come back to me with, well, according to the six websites I checked, no. The Allegro, the Austin Allegro, a favourite car of ours. Two myths about it. Tell me which one's true and which one's false here. Jacking up an Austin Allegro in the wrong place would make the rear window fall out, i.e. the back screen, the back glass. Or the Allegro was more aerodynamic going backwards than forwards. Which is true, which is false.
I've heard the... this is the 70s British saloon
Leyland,
car.
Yeah. Quite a cool little car, actually. I've driven it, but I
do slightly resist when you say our favourite. I don't object to it because I think every car has its place and fan and lover and all the rest of it, but a russet brown Allegro is not necessarily my dream car, but I can appreciate it.
Driving one, you may be pleasantly surprised.
Well, the suspension's very good, isn't it? Because it's hydro
yes,
something.
Yes, indeed.
Clever stuff.
Drives like a big Mini, basically. So, rear window pops out if you jack it up in the wrong place, or more aerodynamic going backward than forward. One's true,
now,
one's false.
I've heard the window popping out before, so I suspect that is the myth, and I suspect that the reality is probably that it's more aerodynamic backwards and forwards because of its shape.
Yeah. That's completely correct.
Yeah. It does, because it's got it is a saloon, isn't it? But it looks like it's another classic British Leyland attempt at making a hatchback, but we're not. We're making a saloon, but we're making it look like a hatchback.
Allegedly, they didn't put an hatchback on it because the Maxi was a hatchback and they didn't want to remove sales from a car that was already selling well. But yes, if you jack up the Allegro in the wrong place, no, the back window doesn't pop out. But yes, it is more aerodynamic going backward than forward, but then most cars are.
Are they?
The thing. Yes. Porsche 928 is more aerodynamic going backward than forward. You know, any car with a sloping back is probably something like an estate car, you know, a Mercedes estate, a Volvo is going to be less aerodynamic going backward. Yeah. probably not by a lot, but, or, you know, a van with a flat back and a sloping front will be more aerodynamic going forward. But, you know, majority of normal saloon cars are more aerodynamic going backwards. I mean, that's nothing, you know.
So what about the glass coming out then? Because I've heard that before. These things, generally speaking, have to start somewhere. The story has to start somewhere, doesn't it? And so surely it started when someone did it and it did happen.
Possibly.
Were you there?
When it was very, very rough. Was I there? Yes, yes. What I've done is I've followed every Allegro owner around.
Jack
since
them
I
up.
Left the factory. It's been my life's work. I'm literally just taking an hour off to come here, and then I'm off to the Hebrides to look at another Allegra. No, I wasn't there, Tony, no. But I mean, I'm not saying it never happened, but I suspect it's highly unlikely. When cars get rusty, glass does fall out of them. Mm-hmm. And if you jack up a car in the wrong way... I had a friend, I'm sure I mentioned this before, I had a friend who had a Sierra that had very, very rusty seals, and we were jacking it up to see what it was like underneath, and he was jacking it up, and I was saying, car's not getting any higher. And then we opened the back door, and and the floor was about halfway up the interior.
Yeah. Hello, Jack.
I also have been in a tyre branch, like where they sell tyres and things, and they were jacking up a Ford Explorer. You remember the old 4x4s? Mm-hmm. The guy certainly got very worried when someone opened both back doors. Now, apparently it is true that they will potentially twist if you open both back doors and jack it up off the back bumper. They're not a... Well, they are a chassis car, actually. I think
they are, yeah, separate chassis. Well, but that's why, isn't it?
Then, it was enough just to knock the bodywork out of alignment if the doors were open.
Defenders, Land Rover Defenders, the chassis intentionally twists.
Said Land Rover at the sales meeting. Oh, they all do that, sir.
Yeah, whilst looking at a Toyota Land Cruiser that steadfastly did not bend.
How do they do that? Said Solihull. Well, ours twist like pasta. What are we doing wrong? We've been doing this since 1948. Surely we can get one that doesn't twist.
The Land Rover Fusilli. Yeah. They do twist the chassis intentionally, apparently, in order that does improve by an inch or so the axle articulation. That's the reason,
that chassis articulation is a fabulous selling point on... the main thing is, it's not such an issue as long as it twists back.
Yes.
The problem is when you... I had a friend with a house who... He had a four-car driveway with a very steep curve at the bottom, and it was a very, very sharp sort of curve onto the pavement and very steep. And, I backed off it, and I kind of did the wrong angle, and one wheel went up in the air on the car. Yeah. But I got out... Cut out a few miles down the road. It took about four goes to get the door closed. And I thought, this really is not good. And it's never quite been the same since, to be honest. So,
and likewise, I'm not going to say which car it is that I'm talking about. Because there'll be loud groans of not another one of those. But this was a nice car, a 1980s car, a one owner vehicle that I bought, and was an absolute peach.
Was it a Saab?
No, it wasn't.
Oh, all right, carry on then.
Anyway, the first weekend I had it, you know, you'd play around, don't you? So I'm jacking it up and whatnot.
Do a couple of jumps, that sort of thing.
Your story about the jacking the Sierra up came true for me, but not the rear, the front driver's side. Busy jacking it up, and there was this horrible noise. You know, it's okay one moment, and then it's not all right the next. And it was particularly annoying because it came through sufficiently to go through the carpet, and it was right by the accelerator pedal. So I had to do some modifications, aka use a hammer, to return it to some kind of position where it roughly was before, so that I could actually apply the accelerator. It does happen.
Oh, that was a serious...
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I was so pleased with the car as well, actually, and it was a beauty. And just one of those classic examples of... The car is beautiful up top and looks okay underneath, but actually it just wasn't. And it was, you know, what a shame.
Yeah.
It's the reverse of doing a house, isn't it? If you rebuild a house, you do the roof first and work your way down. With a car, you start on the bottom and work your way up. Anyway, there we go.
I do remember, actually, I put a hole in the floor of the Rover. I'd forgotten about that until you mentioned it. And I sort of lived with it because, you know, it's an old car. But I did forget once and drive through a massive puddle and got wet.
You got reminded.
It was it was serious enough hole in the passenger side floor that it did just spray muddy water up.
Talking of build
back
quality.
Back onto the topic.
Build quality. What about Friday afternoon cars? Now, I don't really have any research on this whatsoever, other than to say the very first reference to the term Friday afternoon car happened on what was presumably a bulletin board.
Saturday.
Yeah.
Guys,
didn't happen
can
on
we talk
Thursday?
About what happened? What happened yesterday? Just before the mutiny.
The term Friday afternoon car first used, I presume, on a bulletin board, not the internet because it didn't exist, but called net.auto on the 18th of August 1983 at 5:54. I'm afraid I failed to write down whether that was AM or PM. That's the first recorded evidence of the expression a Friday afternoon car. Now, a Friday afternoon car is one that is allegedly thrown together, particularly a British example, on a Friday afternoon because people want to get home.
Yep. And of course, Monday morning cars as well.
In France, they say. Yeah, because I don't know why France in particular, but people don't want to come back to work.
I see, yes.
So you
You
want one on a Wednesday? I must have a Wednesday car, please.
Yeah, you want Wednesday lunchtime, just after lunch.
Yeah.
yeah, supposedly there probably is some truth to it, but I guess it kind of depends. I mean, this is obviously going back to the time when cars were hand built in factories.
Yes, exactly.
I would imagine a small volume producer, such as, I don't know, off the top of my head, somebody like Morgan, say. That's not going to apply. They are, you know, there are so few workers working in there doing their specific jobs.
Carving their cars.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, if there's an error or something wrong, it's very easy to go, oh, that'll be Bob again. You know, come here, Bob, look what you've done. Mm-hmm. And it affects everyone. But in a massive factory where they're turning out 1,000 cars an hour, mistakes will very easily go unseen.
Yeah,
I think there's some truth to it. I when I write about cars, I like to try and find out a bit of their history when I want to write a magazine feature on them. And American cars, it's pretty easy to work out on a lot of cases when they were built and where they were built by the codes, like the VIN of the car. And in some cases, you can identify, you know, down to the day it was built. And I did do one, I think it was a Pontiac, I think, that had been built within probably about 12 hours of Kennedy being assassinated.
Wow.
And I thought that had to have an effect on the assembly line, surely, you know, the president being killed. It wasn't built in Dallas, but it was, you know, sort of quite surprising to see that. Wow, November 63, crikey, you know, when is that? The car still survived, so clearly, don't say it. The car had survived, and obviously it hadn't been that badly built because it was still around. I'd certainly say there is an element to that because it's very, very boring doing assembly line work. If you know, if you're putting on 200 wheels an hour for 9 hours, you're not going, this is really exciting. Genuinely loving this. So I would say yes.
They say as well that court cases, that you're better off, or you're more likely to be acquitted, let off, or given a lenient sentence on I forget what the day is, but there's a specific day, and it must be, as you said, just after lunch.
23rd of March. That's generally been my experience, anyway.
If you get the verdict from the judge just after lunch on this specific day in the week, you're more likely to get a lenient sentence, apparently.
I like the idea, though. There you are in court, and they're going, you know, has jury reached a verdict? Yes, Your Honour. All right. Okay, it looks at the piece of paper and goes, that's lunch. See you in an hour.
Yeah, stalling for time.
They go, huh? Come on. take him from this place to a place of execution. Oh, they still wake up hearing those words. Speaking of American cars, the Superbird we mentioned before, Plymouth Superbird, massive big wing on the back.
Yep.
Was a rumour going round that the only reason that wing was so high was because it's about 3 foot higher coming off the back of the car. Was a rumour that it was only that big because that was the only way you could still get the boot open. If it had a lower spoiler, when you open the boot, it would hit it.
Oh, I see.
And it was mounted to the car. The boot opened sort of underneath it. And, you know, if it hadn't been 3 foot high, then the boot would have gone plong on the tail every time you tried to open it.
So the spoiler was attached to the wings.
The rear corners. No, it wasn't on the boot itself. Because it had been on the boot itself, it'd have probably smashed the back window when you open the boot, or decapitated someone. But I mean, turns. I think years ago, I think I actually perpetuated that myth by writing it in a feature. But but apparently no, completely untrue. The only reason it was 3 foot high was to get it above the roof line of the car, up into the air, aerodynamics,
the clean air or whatever,
the clean air where it would arrest that clean air and
make it dirty.
Yeah, make it dirty. dirty air. Bad air, dirty air. Yes, and keep the back of the car on the racetrack at 180 miles an hour or whatever.
Where do you stand on fuel?
I like petrol. I like diesel.
Specifically... super fuel, high octane.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, like blueberries and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's superfood. Use it.
Do you? Now, that surprises me. That actually genuinely surprises you. So you put super in?
Yes, I put super in my 87 BMW. If I were talking to a normal person and not you, Tony, I probably would say, and I think it makes a difference, and people around the table will go, yeah, I think mine does too. But I know Tony would be like, oh, rubbish.
Yeah, I'm afraid it is.
The reason I do it, where I live in the UK, the super unleaded is a higher octane.
Yeah.
And my car was built in the 80s mm-hmm. when a higher octane rating is of fuel is preferable.
Mm-hmm.
So I will use the highest octane fuel I can, even though it is more expensive in the UK.
Considerably more expensive, it has to be said.
Yeah, I mean, it is actually considerably. Yeah.
on a commodity that's already, you know, gone up substantially recently. So that hasn't swayed you. Mind you don't do a big mileage, do you, of course?
Rarely. I drive to the petrol station and back usually, and that's about all I do.
I just go and fill the thing up. Yeah. That's all I do.
Oh, got to take the car somewhere. I'll get some more petrol. I wouldn't pretend to say it makes a massive difference on my car, because my car is very much an everyday state of tune. Mm. My car is not, you know, wonderfully, precisely honed and restored and in a perfect, you know, it's probably got half the horsepower it left the factory with. It's not got super spark plugs in it and a racing air filter, and you know, it's an everyday 5 Series BMW. It's not an M car. It's not been restored nut and bolt and a perfect, you know, 187 brake
and
200 foot-pounds of torque at the wheels, just like when it left the factory, sort of thing. It's just a mundane, boring saloon.
I think there are two reasons probably for using Super. As far as I can see, two legitimate reasons. One, yes, the octane rating, the RON number, so standard unleaded 95 in the UK, then Super is generally 97. Although there's one leading supermarket chain that is actually 99. Mm. Every little helps. Their Super's 99. Anyway, so it's the that number. Reflects effectively the sort of calorific value of the fuel, doesn't it? The energy contained within it. And older cars that, when it used to be a star rating, 2-star to 5-star, 2 to 5.
5-star,
when it was leaded petrol, that was effectively the RON rating there. So I think there's a reason, a jolly good reason to do it, perhaps, if you have an older car. Maybe yes. But it shouldn't be confused with lead, incidentally, of course, or lead replacement order, because the two things are totally different. It is just the energy content. And, of course, the marketeers say that it's got increased quantities of detergents and, you know, goodies, additives within the petrol, and that's probably true. But incidentally, all petrol, certainly in the UK, and I guess most developed markets, you know, has to meet a certain standard anyway. So this here's another old wives' tale before I even get to my second point. You know, it's supermarket fuel. You know, I never put supermarket fuel in it. It made my car do this and that. I don't believe.
I never go to XYZ. They put water in their fuel.
Yeah, I simply. I've never
why would
believed.
They do that?
No, it's just. You know, no. It may well be true that a budget, you know, inverted commas, budget fuel has fewer additives in it. It has some additives, incidentally. It has to, but may have fewer than, I don't know, Shell V Power or whatever, but it's still a perfectly good fuel. The second reason, so first reason, maybe you use Super for an old car. Second reason, turbocharged or very high end. Now, because the very high end stuff has to get their maximum power outputs for marketing, etc. The engine has been designed around 97 or 99 RON fuel. So I think there's probably a marginal argument there. And if you've spent £500,000 or whatever on a 300 on a Lamborghini, then damn difference does it make anyway? But I think back into the world, you know, realistic realms that we inhabit, if you have a turbocharged car, Possibly, because they have knock sensors for pinking and whatnot, which is a pre-detonation, which will happen more rapidly and more severely on a lower octane fuel. So it is possible, at least in my semi-scientific mind, that you will get marginally, and it is marginal, marginally more power out of super unleaded in a turbocharged car or a supercharged car. But it is very, very marginal. And certainly for ordinary cars, I just know I don't see the benefit. No, not at all.
It's the sort of thing that you would notice marginally if in a turbocharged car it's a colder day and therefore the air going in
more dense.
Is colder than normal, more dense, and it'll run slightly better. If you got the correct tire pressures, handle very slightly better. If you take the roof rack off and you're not driving around with two kits and a full tank of fuel, you will notice a difference. There's all these sorts of things. But as you say, unless you are driving around the sort of the Swiss Alps on a route every day, like your initial D, delivering stuff and kidding every curve perfectly, it's very unlikely that in the day-to-day traffic and motorways and stop-start, you're going to notice much difference. I put it in mine because I just think, you know, as you said before, you know, every little advantage does help. It seems to run slightly better when I'm on a long journey, but then I certainly wouldn't say, I'd never put a lower octane in the car if I couldn't get the higher octane. But there is also, and I don't want to get into this because I'm ill prepared for, you know, I am by the world's least expert on it, but certainly there is the does it ruin old fuel pipes in old cars? Does it melt the old fuel pipes? Does it melt the rubber gaskets and things in the newer fuels?
Well,
and
there is ethanol. Ethanol.
So I will try to avoid ethanol. To be honest, I think my car being 30 odd years old and having never had the rubbers replaced, at some point things are going to leak on it. But again, given the choice, I will try to go for the less
actually,
ethanol
do you
fuels.
There's a good line of argument there. Yeah, the reason three then actually because super is still E5, so the maximum content of ethanol that can be in it is 5%. Standard unleaded 95 is E10. Crikey, I'm sounding quite knowledgeable on this. So it's 10%.
I'm impressed. I'm actually sitting back and listening to this podcast. I'm not just trying to sort of move it along. I'm sitting there.
Can we get this done?
That's really good. Well done, Tony.
I hadn't researched any of that either. I was with a guy the other day. Actually, this sounds marginally name droppy. Actually, he was in his Ferrari Spider. You know, I don't do Ferrari numbers.
Don't do Ferrari,
I don't know what it was.
Totally your knowledge about the car, isn't it?
I was on a rally with him. It was a 458. I said something on the dashboard. Is that right? Quite pretty.
458. Yeah, yeah.
Quite pretty. The head. Nice headlights at the front and whatnot. It was a nice car, actually, to be fair.
They are an attractive looking car, the 458.
Until on this rally it went in a pothole and bent a rim and and needed a new tire, which was difficult to source where we were, but actually managed to source an incorrect size tire to mount on the now bent rim. So this Ferrari had to do the rest of the way with a tyre that was, I don't know, 10 mil wider and 10%, 10% too big or whatever. Anyway,
but front or back?
Front. Front.
Even worse.
Well, no, because at the back, the limited slip diff would get snotty about it, wouldn't it, if there was a different rolling rotation side. Anyway, it was fine.
You not have a spare wheel with it, is it? One of these? Oh, it's one of the ones that comes without a spare.
Yeah. Well, it's a modern car, isn't it? Yeah. Anyway, we were at the petrol station filling up, and some other cars were putting in, you know, glugging down super unleaded. And I walked up to this guy and said, "What are you putting in?" "Well, it's normal unleaded," he said. "It's fine." So you know, that's all he ever puts in it. Mind you, he puts wrong size tyres on his car. So
I suppose, again, I mean, if you're doing a lot of miles, so if he's going to, if you're on a rally, he's going to burn through that tank of fuel in, what, a day, 2 days?
Yes, yeah,
it's
yeah.
not like the car's sitting for 6 months unused.
No. Oh, this is a user. It's done. He's done. He got it new. Yeah. It's done like 60,000 kilometres in
and
it.
I was going to say to him, fair play for, you know, all right, he's damaged the car, but at least he is driving it and using it and enjoying it. You know, he's clearly not overly precious about his Ferrari.
No, so, no, not at all. Yeah.
You know, fair play to him. There's no point in buying it and putting it in a glass case and looking at it and going, oh, I'm still making payments on that. Hey, yeah, but isn't it nice?
It's probably gone up in value by more than the payments, though. So now who's the fool, Mike?
That's also very true. I'm going to go completely off tangent again here, but it's reminding me of a story. And if I don't tell stories when I remember and I forget them. But again, same kind of person. This, as a friend of a friend told me this story, and they were on the Gumball, mm-hmm. which is where all these, you know, people who've got huge amounts of money and have, you know, brand new Lamborghinis and Ferraris and things, and they go tearing across Europe or America or wherever in these supercars and just sort of race about. And it got a fairly awful reputation at one point for the amount of people who crashed their Bugattis and things. But anyway, this chap had a new Lamborghini, and he was filling it up with fuel in whatever country they were in, somewhere in Europe. But through being exhausted, they'd been driving for 3 or 4 days or whatever, he and his co-driver between them managed to tear off the fuel filler cap on this Lamborghini. So then there's just a big hole in the top of the car, and they kind of covered it over with masking tape.
Nice.
But they didn't really have any way of getting a new cap. So they're driving and driving, and then, wonder of wonders, they see a supercar dealership that sells Lamborghinis. Now, bearing in mind that these are multi-millionaires, so they wander in and they say, look, the cap's been torn off the car. Can we buy one? Oh, no, we don't, you know, we don't keep those in stock, logically. you know, we can order one, but it's going to be 3 to 5 days. He said, well, that's no good. I need one now. He said, look, I will give you £1,000 or whatever. Which may actually be too low for a fuel cap on a Lamborghini. Yes. I don't know. That might have been a bargain. That might be half price. But, you know, he said, I will take one off the car over there on the showroom, on the showroom floor. He said, you know, I'll give you £1,000. You can, oh, no, no, we can't do that. Someone might come in and buy it. Said, all right, then how much is that car? And they said, oh, it's, you know, £270,000. Okay, I'll have it. Bought the car, took the fuel cap off it in the car park, put it on his car and drove off. Because you can do that when you've got that amount of money.
That's good. Yeah. And sickeningly, probably made money reselling the one he just bought. Yeah.
Even despite the fact it was now second hand and probably lost 50 grand just on the... I mean, you might say, well, why didn't he just take the new one on the race? But obviously he had to finish the race.
In the car he started.
Sorry. Gumball isn't a race, sorry. They don't race. It's, that would be illegal. But he had to finish the event in the car he started, yes. So,
Some rapid fire ones for you. How about holding your breath in a tunnel?
Did when I was born.
Very good. Very good.
What's the idea behind it? What's the... Stop your ears popping or something.
I don't know. It was so ridiculous. I moved straight on after that. How about?
I think it's just something kids do. I think. Mm. Yeah. How about? Mm.
Scratching your own brand new car on purpose.
To break it in.
Yep. Yeah. So because if you just do a small scratch yourself, that will stop others from damaging the thing henceforth.
Don't really see. Well, I kind of do see the logic, but at the same time, you know, you might get through life having never damaged that car. Friend of mine had done a 10-year restoration on the car, and we were at a show, and I noticed it had a little scratch on it. And he is gonna go mental. Mm-hmm. I thought that's the rest of the weekend. Yeah. But I mentioned it. I thought I got to tell him.
Yeah.
So I said, I noticed that, and he went, "Yeah." He said, "I'm actually quite pleased because that's the first one now." He said, you know, I don't have to worry about it being damaged. It is now damaged. Okay. Oh, thank goodness for that. Yeah. And it was very out of character for him, to be honest. I was expecting
but
it was, he would sue
it
the...
It was kind of a relief. I can see the logic, the relief.
Yeah, he was actually relieved, and I was very surprised. Yeah.
Back to fuel for a second. I don't really want to get stuck on this too far, but I'm going to guess that your opinion won't be that high, but I could be wrong.
Well, you're going to say important, yeah. Then.
And this is a debate as old as the hills. I don't know whether we want to get into this, actually. I'm regretting starting it. Fuel catalysts, you know, tank pellets. Before you answer, let me just say what they are, just in case you don't know. They're in most magazines, brought to us and endorsed by famous people and not famous people, eulogising about how wonderful they are. They're little discs about, what are they, about the size of a 10p coin or something like that. These magical devices, you drop them into the fuel tank, you leave them there, and they get rid of nasties and make combustion better and improve fuel economy, performance, longevity, etc. They do everything. And they're only £30 for up to a 2 litre, or, you know, 35 for up to a 3 litre or whatever. The strangest most surprising of people have backed these things over the years. And likewise, to give it balance, you know, the same sort of ilk of people, you know, poo-poo them and rubbish them, but they still sell them.
For a while, when they first came out, they were also supposedly, you could put them in your tank and then you could run your old car on unleaded fuel and it would completely sort out all the... One, in my opinion, not affiliated with anyone else, I am in no means an expert, I'm just a bloke sat here in his living room, giving his views, so
spouting.
Please, you know, if they're spouting my own opinion, so by all means, do not listen to me.
That's okay.
I would.
That's car
jumped. That established, and that should get the lawyers off our back. 23rd of March. After lunch. If they worked, surely every car manufacturer would equip their car with them. And look at the people who are advertising them. Look at the people who are saying these are definitely true. And the people I'm thinking of have in my head, would you buy a car from any of those people?
I think I might cut that bit out.
I hope you don't. Come on, we need some.
What's wrong?
We need some publicity.
What's wrong with Joan from Derbyshire anyway? She says her Fiat 500 runs much better on them.
I think they're a placebo, but I am not a chemist. I am not a fuel expert. Mm. I have never used them. Mm. I don't see the point, because I think if they were that wonderful, everyone would have said, wow, these things are great. Mm. And I can't, you know, they've been advertised for 20 years in the motoring press.
And the rest,
I can't believe.
Yeah.
Probably more, probably 30 years or more. So, no, I can't believe, it's not better. Mm. Do you warm up your car before you drive away? Do you warm up the engine?
Absolutely, definitely not, Mike. You absolutely should never do that. 10 seconds, let it get some oil pressure, circulate, and all the rest of it, and then start driving relatively gently. Here I go again. I'm on a hobby horse again, aren't I? You want to warm the thing up as quickly as possible, and you will only achieve that by, you know, load, basically. So if you turn the thing on and leave it on the driveway running, then it will take an eternity to warm up, and 90% of your engine damage is done in the first few seconds and minutes anyway.
Correct. If
okay,
you have a modern car.
Mm-hmm.
On an older car, good idea to let the oil circulate a bit. And I take on board exactly what you're saying about drive gently and it gets the oil. But I will let mine sit for about 30 seconds before I pull away.
Oh, OK. All right. Yeah, but we're talking about seconds, not... You know, because letting a car, if you start a car and just leave it and watch the temperature gauge, it takes,
nothing happens.
No, 5-10 minutes, in cold weather before.
Yeah. Hmm. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But I think it also depends on kind of what your drive away is like.
Hmm. It's a 1 in 6 hill.
Exactly. Yeah. If you live, if you're within 50 meters, you're pulling onto a motorway and accelerating to 70, then I wouldn't necessarily be doing that.
No.
But if you've got a modern car, yeah, turn the key and off you go. I mean, they don't even remember the old days of diesels. You had to wait for the glow plugs. And the light went out. They don't even have that anymore. When I drove a diesel van probably about 5-6 years ago, having never driven a modern diesel for ages, and I'm sat there going, well, where's the glow plug light? I can't see it. Well,
it will still have a glow plug light, but it's just so quick you don't see it.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair point.
Glow plug technology. I'm not going to go off too far here because this is seriously dull.
You got away with one. Yeah. Go on.
Glow plug technology has come on massively because you need a glow plug in a diesel engine to start it.
Yes.
Because you do, and these plugs sit in there and basically just heat up to a huge temperature, I don't know, about 3,000 degrees or something nuts. And so that as the fuel is sprayed over it, it's excited, it's ready for business. how was that? That was all right, wasn't it? Yeah, there we go.
Oh, it's perfect.
Great.
Tony.
Well done.
Yeah, I think we'll cut that bit out as well. So, a few quick ones then. True or false? It's illegal to drive with the interior light on.
That's interesting, isn't it? I would guess only if it's a distraction to the driver.
Correct.
Oh, God. I'm doing quite well with this today, actually.
I'm doing very well. Again, we read the same website.
No. I can stick this whole show on my CV, on my showreel, I think.
I wouldn't. Not unless you're planning on retiring. It's illegal to drive in bare feet.
No, you can drive in bare feet.
It's not.
It doesn't feel very nice. I've tried it. It's horrible, but...
Yeah, I'd driven with socks on, and yeah, it didn't sort of feel right.
No, it doesn't.
And other clothes.
Yeah. What a look.
I'm not saying where the socks were. Illegal to drive too slowly.
Yes, on the motorway or any area where you have a minimum speed.
God, you could pass your test tomorrow, you could, couldn't you?
Yeah,
yep, you're right again. Illegal to hang things from the rearview mirror.
Well, it should be, but that that's personal conjecture. No, it can't. I wouldn't think so.
It can be.
It
can be. It's like the interior light. If Mr. Policeman sees you and thinks that you're, the rubber chicken hanging from your rearview mirror is in your way, is obstructing your view or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm guessing you have nothing hanging from your rearview mirror.
I can't think of anything worse.
That sounds like a euphemism, doesn't it?
I can't think of anything worse, Mike, to be honest.
It's not prison slang. Oh, beware of him. He's got stuff hanging from his rearview mirror. I've had stuff from hanging from the mirror.
Really?
Well, I mean, at the moment there's like a Help for Heroes wristband around mine. I don't quite know. I can't remember exactly where I picked it up, but I thought, oh, that's I bought.
Did
one
you pay for it?
The...
Yeah. Okay. You didn't just pick it up off the pavement.
Oh, yeah.
And last year's poppy.
I stole it from an army man. I've also had, at one point or another, furry dice. I'd forgotten this until I started thinking about it last night, but I had furry dice in the Rover. I also had a small disco ball, which I won't go into, but it was a private joke. But, yeah, it was a little, like, about the size of a golf ball, but like a mirrored disco ball hanging from... This wasn't in the way of the mirror, I hasten to add. This was hanging below the mirror.
Yeah.
And currently there's a skull, a little skull hanging from the rearview mirror as well.
I'm not even going to grace that with why. Apparently, tossing coins.
Sorry? What?
Tossing coins.
Oh, points. That was tossing. A bad time for the audio to break, wasn't it?
Tossing coins onto the floor of a new car and leaving them there is good luck.
Really? Mm-hmm.
And peanut shells are bad luck.
Yes. Yes. In stock car racing.
Yes. Because of... This is myth, isn't it? There were two bad accidents, and at both sight of both bad accidents, someone might or might not have found some peanut shells or something.
There was, yeah, this was NASCAR in the 50s. It's actually in one of the NASCAR racing, obscure NASCAR racing movies, and I forget which one it is. Something like, you know, Redline 7000 or Thunder Alley or one of these. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, there was a member of the pit crew was eating peanuts, and... two cars crashed, both drivers killed in the same race, and they found peanut shells in both cars. So, yes. Also, another racing myth is have numbers that look the same upside down are supposed to be bad luck. Zeros, eights, I think they're the main ones.
Six and nine,
possibly.
Yeah. That's something completely
supposedly
different.
The car rolls over. Yeah, yeah.
And number 13, of course, is not looked upon favourably either.
But that's in, you know, that's throughout modern life anyway. I mean, there are hotels that have stories 12 and stories 14. They don't have a 13.
I was involved with some flats once, and there were 16 of them. And it was 1 to 17. Yeah,
oh.
But no number 13.
I had a friend who lived on a street, and there wasn't. It was something like. Number 47 was missing because they'd started numbering it from both ends, counting down on one side, counting up, and miscounted. So it went sort of like 44, 45, 46, 48, without any space between the houses.
Brilliant. I'm glad they weren't engineering the Channel Tunnel.
Yeah, exactly. Two for the price of one. We should be there by now, surely.
Yeah, hang on. We are.
We're two years overdue. Oh, hang on. That looks like Dover. Oh, no.
And that was the second and final mention of tunnels in this episode. What else was there? Tales of various sorts and spellings, enough car facts for a very short Wikipedia entry, and some inspirational thoughts on how and where to wear socks. That's Car Chum for you. I hope you enjoyed our 50th as much as we did, and I hope you're looking forward to 51 as much as us as well. On that, 51 should be one to remember rather than one to forget. In the meantime, keep in touch on our socials. You can find Car Chum on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Until next time, pip pip.